chapter 18, verse 9. Please kindly repeat responsibly. Pranushaktam tapaniyopakalpam. Tapaniyopakalpam. Mahagadam kanchana chitradam sham. Marmanya vikshinam pratudantam durukta. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, ISKCON Founder Acharya Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The demon who hath a wealth of ornaments, bangles, and beautiful golden armor on his body chased the Lord from behind with a great mace. The Lord tolerated his piercing ill words, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. Purport. The Lord could have chastised the demon immediately while the demon was deriding the Lord with ill words, but the Lord tolerated him to please the demigods and to show that they should not be afraid of demons while discharging their duties. Therefore, his toleration was displayed mainly to drive away the fears of the demigods, who should know that the Lord is always present to protect them. The demon's derision of the Lord was just like the barking of dogs. The Lord did not care about it, since he was doing his own work in delivering the earth from the midst of the water. Materialistic demons always possess large amount of gold in various shapes, and they think that the large amount of gold, physical strength and popularity can save them from the wrath of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agnati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Milita Mena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Ena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gupika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadara Vasudhi Gora Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. So this is the continuation of the Leela of Varahadev in relation to Hiranyaksha, who actually plundered all the gold of the earth, and the earth fell into the nether region of the universe. So Varahadev had to deliver the earth back to its constitutional position in the universe. And to do so, some conflict arose and some fight between the Lord and Hiranyaksha. And in these verses, we are seeing some of the dynamics, the exchange between the Lord and Hiranyaksha in terms of chivalry ras, fighting, displaying of chivalrous attitude. And the verse is very clear, describing the demon with his ornaments and gold, displaying his power, and of course his harsh, piercing words towards Lord Bor, in this case, Varahadev. So then the verse ends by saying that the Lord tolerated, but in order to reply to him, he expressed his terrible anger. So in the next few verses, we will see the Lord's expression of anger towards Hiranyaksha. So today we're going to look at this verse specifically, and we're going to look a little bit at the topic of proprietorship, because here it seems that Hiranyaksha was thinking he's the proprietor of everything. He has the freedom to do whatever he wants, however he wants, whenever he wants. He had so much gold and wealth. He had plundered all the riches of the earth planet, and the earth planet fell to the nether region. So he was thinking, I've got so much power, I can do whatever I want. So therefore, Krishna had to appear as a Lila avatar, Varahadev, to set the balance in the universe and to show really who is the proprietor, who is the owner. So let us look at the issue of ownership. In this world, every one of us has some sense of ownership. We think we own something. I've got the apartment, it's mine. I've got the car. I've got this kurta, it's mine. My gamsha, be careful, don't touch it. So every one of us has some idea about proprietorship. So where does this come from? Why do we think something belongs to us? You know, just like Hiranyaksha is thinking, this gold is his, he's got so much power. You know, he's the boss, he can just smash Varahadev. So where is that conception of proprietorship coming from? Now, we look, our whole society is designed on this basis. Basically, people are mad about acquiring properties and wealth. And in fact, they invest all their time and energy in doing that, and with the hope that if I get more wealth and more property, I'll become happier. I will become more fulfilled, more satisfied. I will really have found the true purpose of life. So the desire to accumulate is based on this search for happiness. This is it, at the essence of everything. The desire for accumulation, for wealth, for properties, it's all about searching for happiness, all of us. And we create whole civilizations and societies based around this principle of looking for happiness. We create cities, villages, simply to be together and own something individually or collectively. And then when we own something, the society around us is meant to protect what we own. This is like why we have cities and countries and whatever. So naturally, this is how we form these complex societies. We want to own something, and then we cannot protect it alone, so we need people around us to protect us. And then we protect them. It's like a collective consciousness. So we've got nations, countries, formed in this way, cities, etc. At least that was the original idea. But in the present day and age, we see that although we have cities, we have villages and countries, we see that some people, even within the city and the country and the village, are exploited by others who claim proprietorship over more things than others, and others become dependent on them, and so on and so forth. And practically they enter into something called a matrix. You know, basically we end up in a matrix that we cannot break away from. A few days ago, one of my friends from school, he put some article on Facebook that he's studying now in Norway or Sweden or Finland, some country in North Europe, and he said, you know, I'm sick and tired of this mechanistic society where people don't talk to one another. In the library, everyone is reading iPads, the books are standing on the shelves, everyone is on the computers. You know, he said, I'm just gonna leave this society. So someone asked him, where are you going? He said, I found some communist group living in Spain, some village, and they seem to have it right because they don't exploit one another. It's a communist state, actually, within the Spanish borders inside. And he's thinking that basically he will get out of the matrix in that way. He will get out of this impersonal modern civilization by going to a communistic society. So so everyone is trying to find a way to find some happiness or comfort. And some people will agree, okay, I may be exploited, but I'll stay within the matrix. But other people will feel, no, I have to get out of it. And they want to still have some kind of sense of feeling for, you know, owning something or some living conditions. Apparently everyone in this village has a house, simple house, and they perform different duties within the village and they get some simple salary, like 15 euros a day or something like that. You know, so in this way, you know, it's very simple life, no complicated things. So the issue of proprietorship. So even if someone wants to live in that way, he still has to deal with resources, with energies, with properties, with other people, with justice and injustice. So the issue again of proprietorship will not be fully abandoned. So how do we resolve this complex issue of exploitation in relation to proprietorship? Some people have more than others and they feel unhappy and so on and so forth. How do we resolve that? If we look at any social research and solutions to this, we will see it never comes to real solution. Like, for example, I live in a communistic country my whole childhood. And what it turns out, the communism was, some elite was running again the communist country and was profiting for themselves. So the president had some enormous amount of money. His secretary, she had accumulated so much money that she bought now recently a whole building that belonged to the national television. So after so many years, now she pulled out the money and she bought that whole building. And her son is one of the big, she put her son in one of the parties, their political parties. He's one of the big leaders of a party. And he's like some absolute moron, you know, complete fool, you know. So people are just promoting one another, gaining, cheating others, and this is all the communist background, which communism is supposed to be equality and everything is owned by the state. It's not owned by us, we're all equal. So even the socialistic or communistic developments of thought are failing, because in practice it happens something else. You know, the people generally abuse this and still profit and benefit themselves. At least some elite that governs the rest. And the rest are, of course, unhappy because they want more. So it never really ends. So then, if we can't find solution in a capitalistic way, because capitalism practically means you eliminate your competition. Eliminating the competition so that you can have more and you know, have a stronger position in society and you can be happy. And this is the law of nature. The stronger kills the weaker. You know, that's capitalism. It's like social Darwinism. They're interconnected. And then communism is supposed to be a little more socially oriented and so on and so forth. More balanced way of perception. But still, it is based on some form of proprietorship. And still, it leads to unhappiness. Why he has more, little more than myself? And then there is always unhappiness. Even when people more or less own the same, still there is unhappiness. So then this capitalism, socialism or communism, we have the experience of our society, it doesn't really lead to any solutions. So what is the solution then? The solutions, personally I found the solution within the Vedic literatures, Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada speaks about social communism and spiritual communism. And Prabhupada says spiritual communism means to understand who is the proprietor, the real proprietor. So now when we look at the issue of proprietorship, who is really an owner? What constitutes ownership? Ownership means that you have something that you can claim to be yours and nobody has the right to take it away from you. That is the definition of proprietorship, right? Okay? You have something, you claim it to be yours, and nobody has the right to take it away from you. That's called proprietorship. But now, we see that although you may own something, you may lose it after some time. You may just, for example, you may buy a house and you may start paying a bond to the bank, but then at some point you may lose your job, you may not be able to pay the bond and the house can be repossessed. So what you owned is no longer yours. Then the bank may get into bankruptcy, and then whatever assets they have, they may be also possessed by another entity, a bigger, stronger entity, a bigger, stronger economic predator, put it this way, can swallow the small predator. So, and then ultimately at the time of death, we all lose everything. Even the big predators, big banks, big bankers that are producing the social current system, they also will have to bow down to death and lose everything. So who is then the owner? This is a very interesting point. So a lot of people will say, look, there is no owner. We are all equal. We all live and die. So nothing belongs to anyone. But and because it doesn't belong to anyone, if you're clever, you can just steal something and appropriate it, put your name on it, and then own it while you can. So this is modern civilization. Because they do not see who is the owner, they think in that way. But from a Vedic perspective, we know that there must be an owner. Why? Because there is very strict laws which we cannot overpower. That is the indication that there is an owner. There are very strict laws. For example, time, nobody of us can overcome time. And nobody can overcome death. So this indicates that someone has to be setting up these things in motion. Because laws are always connected with some personality. What is the logic in relation to that? We do not see dead objects or dead stones creating laws. Have any one of you seen dead stones or dead objects creating laws? No. So what does this mean? It means if there are laws in the universe, if there is time that controls everything, that means there must be a conscious being behind it. So we may not be able to see who that conscious being is, but that doesn't mean the conscious being doesn't exist. It is very logical that there must be a conscious being because we are controlled, all of us, including the bankers and politicians and everyone. Even devotees, we have to leave our bodies. We cannot just stay eternally in this body, Someone is controlling. So from this perspective, we want to deepen our research to understand who is that controller of everything so that we could understand what is proprietorship. So when we research the knowledge that comes about the supreme force or conscious being is only related to the theistic literature like Bible, Quran, Torah, for example, or the Vedas. Only certain theistic literatures reveal the existence of such an inconceivable personality for the average man on the street. So, to really understand the proprietor, one has to adopt a process of investigation that will lead to realization, direct experience that there is actually someone who owns everything. At the moment, we can say it's a hypothesis. It's a logical hypothesis, but still the yoga texts explain if you follow the process, you'll be able to see that someone really is the proprietor, the owner of everything. And we claim some temporary proprietorship. So, why do we call this supreme being the owner of everything? Because this supreme being is beyond the laws of nature. That supreme being is not controlled by anyone. No laws can govern him. And this is logical, since the laws are coming from him. He cannot be controlled by the laws. Just like I heard this statement about Rockefeller. He said, I don't care who is the president, as long as I control the money. So he is above the law in one sense, because he controls the money, he can decide which corporations can flourish, he can subsidize, and which not, which corporations can flourish, and they in their turn they subsidize specific presidents which can serve their purposes. But the guy who controls the money is beyond the control of the government, because the government is simply a puppet government being put up by him. So in the same way, Krishna is the supreme government. We say Krishna in the Vedic literature. And he cannot be controlled by his laws or his demigods or his any representatives, in fact. He cannot be manipulated or forced to do something. He is an independent person. And what makes him a proprietor is that everything originates from him. So, if something originates from him, if in fact something is his own energy, that makes him immediately the proprietor of everything. According to the Vedic literature, there is nothing outside of Krishna. Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Kshetra Gyaketa Tapara Avidya Karma Samgeya Trite Shakti Ishite. There is nothing outside of the Supreme Being. All the energies that we see are simply emanations from the Lord. There is nothing else outside of Krishna. There is no wall where we can say, here Krishna ends, and after that there is vacuum. There is nothing like this. He is unlimited. And although he is unlimited, he has a form, and that form is also unlimited. And we know the pastime of Yashoda trying to bind Damodar. I think she failed with taking all the rope in the whole village, which is against the laws of physics. Because if you have 2 meters rope and someone is 50 centimeter torso, you can tie him up very nicely. But it would not work with Krishna. Then she took 4 meter and 5 meter and 100 meter rope, and still it was 2 fingers short. So this is the inconceivable position of the source of everything, which we call, whom we call Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. So he is actually the original proprietor. Because he doesn't have a beginning, he doesn't have end, and everything is just an expression of his own energy. Just like in this world, we can say an example, just a crude example of proprietorship is, you know, we cannot really give the same example, because everything that we own, we have to take it from outside of ourselves. It's really not possible to really produce something from your own body and really use it in some way. You know, most of our bodies is just waste. You know. So, you know, how do we really give a crude example even of proprietorship? It's not possible. While everything that emanates from Krishna is opulence, it's not a waste. We own everything that comes out of our body is waste, but everything that comes out of Krishna's form, transcendental form, is opulence. And that's why he's called Krishna. He's all attractive. Everyone wants to gain that opulence in the vain search for happiness when the living entity is separated from Krishna. So in a strict sense, nobody really owns anything in this world. And it's Maha illusion to think we are owning something. It's a dance with Maya. To think I am owning this house, this is my car, this is my bank balance, this is my property. This is all illusion. Now, if it's everything is belongs to Krishna, if it's not ours, then what should we do? Should we just say, okay, everything belongs to God, people can take my car, they can take my apartment because it belongs to God, you know. Now, how do we respond to this? Well, the devotee thinks in this way, that yes, my house belongs to Krishna, my car belongs to Krishna, and I have it temporarily for the usage of Krishna's service. So nobody has the right to come and take it away from me unless Krishna wants it to be taken away. So we don't think we're a proprietor, but we see ourselves as a caretaker of Krishna's property. Whether you have money, whether you have apartment, or a car, or anything, any facilities, you see yourself as caretaker. So nobody is really a proprietor. We are just simply caretakers of what belongs to the Supreme Conscious Being. And only when we achieve this kind of consciousness of caretaking, I am a caretaker, then we can be really satisfied with what we have. Because we realize that whatever the boss has provided for me, the supreme owner, and also whatever my karma has provided for me, I am happy with that. So Aniruddha Prabhu was telling me the Isha Vasya Vidam Sarvam Yat Kinchit Jagatam Chitam Tena Tek Tena Bunjita. How was the Bunjita? So this verse from Isupanishad is, you know, one should be satisfied with whatever he has provided by his own karma or by the Lord's arrangement. And in this way one can live eternally without getting entangled in karma. So when someone is satisfied with what is provided and he uses it as a service to the Lord, he is never entangled in karma. Because he uses everything for the correct owner of everything. So, Only in that way a person can become satisfied, because we can realize this belongs to Krishna. According to my karma, I have received that much. I should be satisfied, because life in this world is temporary and my energy should be invested in getting out of this world rather than trying to make myself comfortable in this world. So in that way I'm satisfied with what I have, and I continue striving for the ultimate objective, getting out of the cycle of birth and death, rather than keep on accumulating wealth for the sake of false ownership. If someone has the capacity to make money and the money are coming, then that is again his awarded by awarded reaction by his karma. So if someone can make millions of money and if he can offer them to Krishna, then that's great, you know. But if someone cannot make millions, but he wants to make millions, then he will get disturbed, because he will misdirect his whole energy into struggling to make money while it is not supposed to be his karma, and ultimately he will misuse most of his time into economic struggle rather than spiritual struggle. So, and even if someone struggles economically, and even if he achieves something after a long, prolonged struggle, then he will still lose it. And what's the use of the whole that thing? So if someone has satisfaction in the heart with whatever they have, is the greatest quality for a human being within this world, to be satisfied. And when we have the satisfaction, we can actually aspire for spiritual progress. Because then we have, when you are satisfied, you have the time to invest in spiritual development, and you simultaneously maintain in your material status quo whatever you need for your daily maintenance of your family, of yourself. You gotta do this. But the objective is really getting out of this prison. And here we see with Hiranyaksha totally the opposite. Hiranyaksha was covered with gold. He had this big lance of gold, and you know, like it's kind of a comic character of the rappers of the 80s, you know, with the big lances and the, you know, fingers, ring fingers, you know, all gold. And like that, you know, showing off some opulence. So this is like, probably that's where they got it from Hiranyaksha. You know. And, you know, trying to show status or wealth and pretending that this is really what makes us happy. The whole world, everyone is cheated. Everyone is becoming something because they think, if I become this, I'll become happy. I met now recently some youngsters. They said, hey, I want to have dreadlocks. You know, I said, why? It's cool. So they want to have dreadlocks because they think, if I have dreadlocks, I'll be happy. You see? But I've seen many guys with dreadlocks that are utterly miserable. So, because they see something portrayed on MTV or something, you know, artificially kind of portrayed in magazines or whatever, they think it's all glamour and glory. And this is it. And my mother and father, they have a short hair. They go to work. They should be some stupid fools. And look at these guys and girls with the dreads. They just enjoy having fun in life. I should become like that. They don't understand that to have fun in life means you gotta work hard. So this projection on MTV or the magazines is just the tip of the iceberg, which ultimately entices the person to become a consumer and to get into, you know, a society which is simply focused on economic development and consumerism. So whether it's dreadlocks or short hair, they don't care. As long as you're a consumer, it's all cool. But a person who is satisfied and simple, person who realizes to whom everything belongs, they can live with any amount of wealth, small or big, they are satisfied and they know how to use it for the pleasure of the owner, because we are simply a caretaker. And that is really a glorious life, happy life, free of fear and anxiety, free of stress, and of course all the related diseases to this stress, and a life that is dedicated to the upliftment of humanity. This is, I would say, the greatest life that one can have in this material world. Life dedicated to the upliftment of humanity, specifically the spiritual upliftment of others. So here, Hiranyaksha and the Lord are in a deadlock. They are fighting, and the Lord is practically, the word is nonchalant. He is not disturbed by the harsh, ill words of Hiranyaksha, because he's completely detached from what Hiranyaksha thinks about himself. Prabhupada says the demons, derision of the Lord is just like the barking of dogs. The dogs bark, but the caravan passes. Sometimes we pass by some house and the dog is barking, but we pass. So we don't really worry about the barking of the dog. We're gonna go do our business, whatever our business is. So the Lord's business, Prabhupada says, he was doing his own work in delivering the earth from the midst of the water. So Krishna has the full power to do whatever he wants to. He can appear as a boar. If someone says, you guys are mad, you believe in boars and all that, you can tell him that actually you're mad if you think that the Supreme cannot do whatever he wants to, including appearing as a boar. If you limit the source of everything, that means you are mad. Or you're not understanding actually what is the Supreme source of everything. So he appears as a boar. He has the full capacity to lift Mother Earth, Bhumi, and restore Earth back in its position. Yesterday one Mataji was asking me, you know, if Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, isn't it that Varahadev's feat is greater than Krishna lifting Govardhan, because Varaha lifted the whole planet and Krishna lifted just Govardhan. Isn't it that Varaha is greater than Krishna? I said, why do you think Varaha is different than Krishna? And why do you think Krishna is different than Varaha? He's the same person who appears in that way. You get that? So Krishna appears as Varaha and he lifts the whole earth. He can do whatever he wants to. So they are non-different. But still, Krishna is the original Swayam Bhagavan. And therefore, we are fortunate to know this by the mercy of Prabhupada, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by worshipping Radha and Krishna, in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we can go to the topmost abode, Goloka Vrindavan, where everything that is owned by the Lord is there for His devotees to enjoy as well. And this is where we should try to invite, like a tour agents, the people, you know, what do you call, travel agents, you know, come enjoy. I'm going to present you to the best holiday place, you know, Goloka Vrindavan. So we should try to preach this message in that way and bring people closer to Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comments? Aniruddha Prabhu? Dharmatma Prabhu?
There is a sense of proprietorship. So, how do we understand our own possessions?
Own possessions? Yes.
But not
more than that.
Yeah, not more than that. So, yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, how do we understand this sense of partnership. Yeah. And how do we know what's our quota?
Good.
How do we know what's our quota?
Yes.
There is always a sense of striving or effort, especially for the greenhouse, you know, for the householders, because
yes.
they have responsibilities and they have proprietorship. So what's the, you know, for a brahmachari it's fairly simple. Well, even the brahmachari sometimes get confused.
Mm.
And you know, in his country, say the sannyasis have most of the wealth even.
Yes.
How do we work out what's our sense of proprietorship and how do we determine what's our
good point. Again, it is based on our service. If our service requires more facilities, then we can aspire for that, so that we can actually execute the service as best as we can. But if the service is perfectly maintained as it is, and there is no need for unnecessary struggle, you know, extra, exceptionally big struggle. I mean, some struggle is always there. Then if we struggle beyond what is required, then we will certainly get frustrated. So we have to struggle to the point where we actually manage what we require, to have the basics, and we are satisfied with having the basics, which are natural requirements for existence. So, you know, so how do you determine what is natural and what is not natural? Again, that depends on the person, you know. Some persons, whatever they touch turns into gold. Some people are just like that. And that means their capacity to acquire wealth is much bigger than others. And others, when they touch the gold, it turns into sand, you know. So, you know, So it depends on the karma of every individual person. And I guess by living in the world and doing what we're doing, we're going to figure out quickly, if we observe ourselves and the reactions to our actions, we can observe very quickly, you know, what is our dharma or what is the requirement that we need. We can observe very quickly. So probably the real battle will be with the satisfaction, to find satisfaction with what we, our quota is. That is probably the greatest problem, rather than you know, pursuing something that is beyond our means or needs. You know, people would rather do that than become satisfied with what they have. You know, generally it's like that. We would rather go on a crusade, getting more and more, than be satisfied with what we have, and invest time and energy into spiritual development. So, again, if someone is a Brahman, he can live very simply. If someone is a Kshatriya, he can live more opulently, Vaishya. And if someone is a Shudra, naturally they will live simply, because they will not make a lot of money to really accumulate and live lavishly. So, we already have our Varna by birth, and we fall into it. Somehow or other we fall into it. Especially by the mercy of Prabhupada, we can really, people can fall into Varnas that are more natural to them, because our modern society produces Shudras. Let's be honest with that. I mean, you go to university, you study mathematics to become a Shudra. You know, you go into some company, you start calculating how the company is making profit. But this is just Shudra, you know. You're a very PhD Shudra or something. You know. It's like that. So, Vaishya means someone who is an independent person who makes money and who can look after, you know, production, cows. He's independent. He doesn't really depend on someone to pay him something. He depends on the market. And of course, Vaishyas depend on God. And then Kshatriyas, they are very courageous individuals, leaders, and they are very much driven by righteousness. They want to see righteousness. They want to see Dharma being followed. That is some natural characteristics of Kshatriyas. Kshatriya is not some bullies that would like to fight with others. Kshatriya means Dharma, one who follows Dharma and teaches by example. So naturally within our Prabhupada gave us this spectrum of varnas which is not there within the modern world. Modern world you either become a Vaishya or a Shudra. And most people are Shudra, of course. So, but Prabhupada helped us to understand. So some devotees naturally will have more brahminical qualities. Some will have more kshatriya quality. They will like to manage and protect others and guide others. And some will be vaishyas. They will be just very good in making money. And then the vaishya will of course make exuberant amount of money in relation to what a laborer will make. And that will be fine for a vaishya. If he's a genuine person and he uses the money to serve Krishna. There is many multi-millionaires within ISKCON. So we cannot say they're crooks and they're all like horrible people and all that. No, they're using the wealth to build, for example, Mayapur, this beautiful project that Prabhupada envisioned. Or they will support a project such as ISKCON Melbourne or something, you know. Or they'll create another project that will be funded by them, so then his wealth is not filthy wealth, he's using it for God. So it depends on the person, I would say, and it depends on the varna, and then we have to become satisfied with what is our varna, what is our income, what is our limitation, what is our needs, and then when we are satisfied, practically satisfied, not that we're satisfied with not providing for our family, and no, I'm cool now, it's fine. No, that's impractical. So this is how I would say, we're going to look at this issue. And talking about ownership again, I'm saying that we should always see that although we own something, it's not really ours. It belongs to Krishna, and we are caretaker rather than owner. This is what I want to put across again and again. Just always think everything belongs to Krishna, and I am Krishna's servant. And then that's not sentimentalism, because if someone says, if everything belongs to God, then just give it to me. But the point is, you cannot just give it to anyone unless you know Krishna will be happy. And if that person will misuse it, why should I give it to them? Or if I'll inconvenience my own existence and I'll put myself in a very inconvenient situation, that will be counterproductive to development of spiritual consciousness. So that's how we measure what is proper and what is improper. Like the Mayavadis, they'll say, we are all one, everything is one. And then we tell them, okay, if everything is one, then give me your money. I am you and you are me, so your bank balance is mine. Then they may say, if everything belongs to Krishna, then give me your house. But we say, no, Krishna doesn't want me to give it to you. That's different, you see. And why Krishna doesn't want me to give it to you? Because you misuse it. And also, I need some place to exist with my family and serve him and do work for him from that position. So it doesn't make sense for me to give it to you, because it belongs to him and he's given it to me. You see, like that. So this is how I would see it in Nirvana Prabhu. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Another issue is that there's sometimes a perception that the most advanced person is the one who has very little.
Yes.
Lives really,
Yes.
In a very, very simple way, and has nothing.
Exactly.
Wears rags and... But the concept that you're all describing or illustrating real renunciation means a person may have nothing and he's always happy with that, but if he has something, He's also happy with
that. Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
And he uses it.
Yes.
He uses it properly.
Exactly.
Because he understands what it wants to.
Exactly.
Rather than, you know, rejecting everything.
Yes.
Because it's not a matter of how much you've got, because actually it's not able to think about.
Yes.
It's how you use it.
Exactly.
When you've got control.
Yes. Yeah. And you made the point that sometimes sannyasis have a lot of wealth. Yes, but when we look at what they use the wealth for, we understand it is good, it's practical. Because, like, there was this video recently, like they feed something like 100,000 children in Mumbai alone, or Mumbai area in the Maharashtra. So, if a lot of donations are going towards practically Radhanath Maharaj, you know, him running the project there, that doesn't mean he puts it in his pocket. He's given everything back to the world. And in fact, he doesn't even, according to what I heard, he doesn't even have a bank balance. He gets devotees to run the bank accounts for him, and he just oversees that everything is used properly for the Lord. So, when people criticize sannyasis, oh, they have a lot of wealth, they should also see what they're doing with that wealth. Because I see the genuine sannyasis, they live a very simple life. I don't see them driving Rolls Royces and, you know, having expensive Rolexes and all that, or lances with gold chains to show some affluence. You know, I don't see this. They live a very simple life. They take some little kichuri, you know, whatever the devotees will offer them. And whatever wealth is there, they are given in the service of the Lord. So, in fact, the more renounced, genuinely renounced is, the more wealthy one becomes. Because, like Prabhupada said, I gave up the world and Krishna gave me everything. I gave up, you know, whatever little I have, Prabhupada said, and Krishna gave me the whole world. So, like that. So, the more renounced is one, meaning the more one realizes everything belongs to Krishna, the more wealthy he becomes. In a sense, more wealth comes to them, and then they use that wealth for the benefit of everyone else. They don't get attached to it and destroyed by it. Bhaktirtha Maharaj also was telling me that the most people fall down in ISKCON, if you observe it, is due to money and sex. These are the two things why people fall down. So if someone is impure, when money comes to him, he falls. Because he thinks, oh, I've got so much wealth, now I can enjoy. Maya gets him, you know. But someone is pure, he can manage billions of dollars without any problem. And he will still be pure. So we should not criticize the devotees who have simple, pure heart trying to serve Prabhupada. You know, by benefiting others, and what they're doing is visible. You know, it's not that, it's invisible. Yeah. So, yeah, anyways, this is a good topic. It's good to meditate on it, and good to think how we actually just caretakers. Then, to end the session is, I remember the pastime of Ramanuja. Ramanuja Acharya had two Grihastha disciples. He had many, but two of them were not so well-to-do people. But they had some sufficient wealth. So Ramanuja wanted to teach his disciples what is renunciation, proper renunciation. So he sent one sannyasi to the house of this householder's place. He told them, go and try to take some gold, steal something from them, or you know, just take something from them, you know, and see how will they respond. So this sannyasi went, but when he entered into the house, he saw that only the wife was there, and she was sleeping, and the husband was not there. So he was thinking, my Guru Maharaj asked me to take something from this house and bring it to him, but she is sleeping and the husband is not here, what can I do? So he decided, I'll just She had gold earrings. I'll just steal one earring. She's sleeping like this. I'll take something and I'll bring it to him. So when he took the one earring from her, the lady started moving and turned to the other side. And then the brahmachari or the sannyasi became afraid and ran away. So he went to his guru. He said, Guru Maharaj, I got this gold from them. He said, how did you get it? No, she was sleeping. Oh, sleeping? Yes. And, you know, I just thought I cannot wake her up. I just took this gold earring from her. And then what did she do? Ramanuja asked. And he said, no, when I started taking this, she started waking up and I ran away. I saw her turning around on the other side and I ran away. But the actual fact was that she, the lady, was thinking, later on we are understanding, when the husband came and asked her what happened, she said, some sannyasi came to steal from our house and he took my earring. And the husband said to him, what did you do? And she said, I turned on the other side to give him to steal the other earring. But he got scared and he ran away. He thought that I'm waking up. So Ramanuja practically showed the disciple through this experience how detached were his householders. You know, in a sense, they saw that this person was from the mat, from the temple. And, you know, they were thinking if the Lord wants something for the temple, they knew the people are genuine at that time. He's probably stealing because the mat is in trouble. The church is in trouble. The temple is struggling with money. So if it's for them, then give them. You know, don't scare him. Turn around, let him take the other one. She was so detached. And then they went to some river or something, to the ocean, Ramanuja with his disciples. And when they went inside, Ramanuja asked someone to move their clothes around. And then when the sannyasis came out, they started fighting. Hey, this is my cloth. Why you took my gamsha? Hey, give me my chada. You know, everyone started fighting because their clothes were mixed while they were in the river. So Ramanuja wanted to show them that they're not really detached in a proper sense. They were like still attached to externals. And in fact, the actual example that they were attached was that they fought. They didn't say, hey, I'm sorry, Prabhu, this is my cloth, you know. But they started fighting, hey, why did you take my cloth? And, you know, they got angry with each other, and, you know. So that shows the attachment is there. If someone is peacefully addressing an issue, then you know that there is no attachment. But they started fighting. So Ramanuja was showing his sannyasis how attached they were and how the grihasthas could be so detached by using everything for the Lord. So it depends all on the consciousness, really. And you can have very wonderful sannyasis, brahmacharis, who are very detached. And you can have also very wonderful grihasthas that are very detached. In a sense, they use everything in the Lord's service. So, you know, and you can have attached brahmacharis and attached grihasthas. This all depends on the consciousness. And the cure for that is to remember always that Krishna is the owner of everything. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutam nam gyatva mam shantim richati. If you just remember this, then this verse, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. I am the master of all planets and demigods. I am the friend of all living entities. Suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shantim richati. If you understand this, you become peaceful. Shantosh, satisfied. You can really become satisfied. And then the only endeavor, intense endeavor, can be spiritual endeavor. And of course, you will be endeavoring towards maintenance of your needs in Krishna consciousness, depending on your ashram and situation. It's very practical. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Grant Urachimot Bhagavatam ki? Gaur Premanandi.